This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we're here in The Think Tank. Our guest is Tom Ryan, noted attorney and general troublemaker. We have a full plate of all things politics. Last week, we interviewed both Kelly Fryer, Democratic candidate for governor, Ken Bennett, Republican candidate for governor. We've now interviewed all of the candidates for governor except Doug Ducey. The invitation is out.
We'll see if he comes.
We'll see. He's been in this studio, but not to talk to me. So.
You might ask questions about the truth and things like that. Come on, Doug.
That can be a plus or it can be a minus. Well, anyway, I want to start big here. Overall, the national politics, it seems to me let's move a little bit in the state. The one thing that in state politics, it's a given. This is a Republican state. There's all this talk about going purple. I've never seen the evidence of it. We haven't elected a statewide Democratic candidate for anything in some years.
Janet Napolitano.
There is, however, one thing I think that's a potential disruptive change, and that is the education forces.
Oh, I think so. This whole invest in ed movement has
invest in ed, red for ed, basically 50,000 teachers marching at the state capitol, thousands of them sticking around and watching the ugly process of legislation being ground out.
The visuals on the nightly news of those throngs of people dressed in red surrounding the state capitol was an impressive sight. Mm-hmm. And any politician who wasn't paying attention to that is probably a politician who may not be in office after November.
And Chuck Coughlin, who's on here regularly, made the comment. He said, "This is the nicest group of protesters I've ever seen." And then he answers his own question. He says, "They're teachers. They're nice people. We love our teachers." And so many groups protesting easily get put into this sort of marginalized status because they get defined by the craziest among them. You've got hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating and there's 15 of them flow off the handle and do something stupid. And it defines the whole group. Well, with the teachers, there was no such individual.
The craziest thing you saw out there were music teachers banding together to play band music to support the...
And you know, I'll say something else. They were good.
Yeah.
Your average music teacher in a high school is a professional musician.
That's right.
That's best band I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, they're playing. They were playing some great stuff. But I want to go back and talk about it because this is important. Education has always been an important issue in the state of Arizona from its very founding. We are a land grant state. That means when we entered our contract with the rest of the United States to become a state, we agreed to put aside resources, mostly land, to fund education that was intended to be free or as nearly free as possible. That's
that's for the universities. And that provision is almost unique among state constitutions. That is so important that it is part and parcel of our founding document. Now, legislators have found ways to, in effect, ignore that because
yes,
it's hard to operationalize this. As possible is there's a wiggle room.
Right.
And they defunded it to the point where, you know, the last go around, they said, well, as long as our tuition is in the bottom half of the country.
Correct. No, they're not following the constitutional mandate. And unfortunately, our Arizona Supreme Court has determined that this is largely a political issue in a case called Cromco versus state of Arizona. It is a political issue.
That's John Cromco, the legislator, right?
Yeah, you remember him. That's right. But, the money that has been generated from the land grant, corpus that's managed by the state treasurer has actually been very effective in developing the public school system in the state of Arizona. The problem is we have a party in control now that recognizes that a strong public school system is antithetical to their political agenda. And so they're doing everything they can to, one, defund it, and number two, to defang it, meaning, you know, to make it not effective.
You're saying that not only are they not interested in paying for it, that's a pretty strong statement. You're saying they're actively trying to undermine.
Absolutely. I'm going to be very clear about this. They are absolutely trying to undermine the public education system in the state of Arizona. Let's talk about how they're doing that, though. Number one, they're not following the constitutional mandate of funding it to the degree that it would be either free or nearly free. Number two, they're giving away corporate tax cuts that are insane, make no financial sense whatsoever. And thirdly, they're allowing these charter schools to
You're talking about, if I can just interrupt for a second, you're talking about the credits.
Correct.
And in effect, if you're a corporation and you give a credit to a private school, you give money to a private school.
You get a credit for that.
A dollar for, not a deduction, a credit. In other words, you deduct your taxes by 100% of the amount that you donated. In effect, you are really spending state resources when you're doing that.
Exactly. A lot of these charter school systems, too, are basically publicly funded religious schools. Now, look, I'm the product of a Catholic school.
That's two of us.
Yeah, okay. And when I went to a Catholic school, my father paid public school taxes. He didn't complain. And he also paid for a Catholic school education. And the concept was, hey, look, I want you to go to a Catholic school. But it wasn't anything antithetical to the public school. We paid both taxes. Now what's happening, though, is they've created charter school systems that are basically Catholic light or Mormon light. And we are funding them in violating the separation of church and state mandates.
For the record, my Catholic school I managed to run with no tuition.
Impressive.
I mean, essentially, first of all, I mean, the teachers were nuns.
Yes.
So they weren't paid. But all things considered, I think back to how they did it and I say, oh, they didn't spend any money on anything.
When I went to a little Catholic high school out in Chandler, Seton High, and same thing. It was the cost was very low, and we had nuns running it, nuns and Christian brothers, and they're not out looking for a lot of money, but they're also taking care of a lot of kids who may not have gotten a good education elsewhere. So
I also remember a factoid about that nobody believes, but I validated with the principal many years later. My first grade class.
What was that?
72 kids per class, one teacher, no aid. And the fear of God.
And the fear of God.
Six rows of 12. I remember it specifically. And people said, no, that can't be. Well, the comment of the principal was twofold. First of all, she validated that was correct. But she followed it and said, we couldn't do that anymore. We now have 36, which is a high number by contemporary standards. But she said the attention span is not what it used to be. I mean, and back in those days, if they told you to sit still and be quiet, you sat still and be quiet.
What's the one question you never get in a Catholic school?
What's that?
What are you wearing for school tomorrow?
Okay, Tom Ryan will be back in just a minute in the think tank talking all things politics with an occasional digression.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are back with Tom Ryan talking Arizona politics. Tom, why can't Democrats win anything in the state of Arizona?
The crazy thing is, when this state first started, Democrats were in control, and it was a very progressive state. Sometime after World War II, the change began, starting with—
Democrats still reign, but at the time there were a lot of conservative Democrats in the rural areas, giving Democrats a majority, but not necessarily what we think of today as a Democrat.
Correct. They were blue dog rural Democrats. But what's changed—
Who were more conservative than, you elected Democrats who were more conservative than Republicans.
In many cases, that was true. I think the change started to come after World War II, as many of the military men who had trained either at Williams Air Force Base or Luke Air Force Base or some of the other bases around town came back because they liked the lifestyle in Arizona. But now you got to remember, these are guys—
Air conditioning. And 1960, 1950, Arizona growth just goes through the ceiling.
Absolutely. It's amazing to see the difference of, for example, looking out here at Camelback Mountain versus what it is today with all the development around
you
it.
You a native here?
I am. Born and raised in Chandler. Mm-hmm. But
that was a farm town.
Oh,
right?
It was. If you go out there now, it's a huge Intel town, a big technology mm-hmm. town, and it's changed. But there was this incredible movement led by Barry Goldwater and Paul Fannin, gentlemen like that. But even then, it still was kind of a moderate Republican. It wasn't, they were still being, they were raised in the FDR era. They were still under the idea there's a social contract.
And that was the Republicans of the 50s. You look at things like the Republican platforms from the 50s, and they talk about how we have a responsibility for taking care of people that can't take care of themselves, et cetera. Now, it was big on self-reliance. It was big on efficiency.
Right.
Frankly, they were good people. You know, they basically – they wanted government to be run with some efficiency.
Yes.
And at the time – there were, big city corruption issue with Democrats.
Yes.
And the Republicans were kind of the party of small town America. We're going to do good, but we're going to do it smart and well.
I started off my life as an East Valley Republican and a happy one at that. And I look at the Republican leaders that we had back then, Stan Turley, Jamie Sossaman, Jim Skelly. They were all Republicans, all conservative, but they knew how to reach across the aisle and talk to an Art Hamilton and say, all right, I may disagree with you on this point, but let's see what we can get to work out.
Somewhere my first political act was to write a letter to the newspaper supporting Barry Goldwater for president.
I missed out on going to the Youth Senate program. Mm-hmm. I had done a test. I was in the top five in the state of Arizona in high school, and they wanted to interview me. And the one question they asked me was, Barry Goldwater is running for president and he hasn't been voting in office. I knew what the right answer was. It's okay if he's not voting on everything. But I gave him the wrong answer. But I did, knowing it was actually the correct answer, which is no, he was elected to represent the state of Arizona, not run for a higher office. I didn't get to go back to D.C.
Yeah, but how many politicians are not running for higher office?
Well, there are a lot of people who I think are highly qualified to run for office, but they look at the ugliness of politics today, the divisive nature of it, the attacks on family. There are a lot of good men and women who look at this and say, I'd run, but I'm not going to subject myself.
Well, you
to that.
Also have. There are several offices in this state. Secretary of State, State Treasurer. Nobody runs because they want to run that office. They're running for that office because they think it's stepping stone to be governor.
Well, I think so. If you want to be governor in the state of
Rose
Arizona.
Rose Mofford, I think, wanted to be Secretary of State. I know she wanted to be Secretary of State.
Right.
I mean, she was happy in the office, but she did not aspire to be governor.
No, I agree with you. I think but if you want to be governor in the state of Arizona, Secretary of State is a great way to go.
50% have become in the last 40 years, 50%.
Right. You have a very good chance of whoever this is. So that's why paying attention to
the secretary. We've indicted governors. Death. And run for other office.
Or be appointed
or
to
be termed off. Yeah, right. Or be appointed to. So the track record's been pretty good for Secretary of State.
Right. You're essentially a vice president.
I've yet to hear somebody credibly argue why they want to be Secretary of State because of what they want to accomplish in that office.
Well, now that voting rights is more on the front burner. Secretary of State position in the state of Arizona is one that everybody needs to be paying attention to, especially as we move from paper ballots to electronic ballots. That's a very important issue. Who gets to vote? That's a very important issue.
How much does the Secretary of State control that?
They can be testifying down at the state legislature. The legislature mm-hmm. sets the law.
Yeah.
But this Secretary of State, Michelle Reagan, has been active down in the state legislature through her, her agents.
You're a voice. I will grant you that.
Yeah.
As is, for example, the superintendent of public instruction.
Correct.
Mostly you are a voice for education. You're in literal control of very little.
If you are the superintendent of public instruction, the state treasurer, or the state secretary of state, you have career people who know the process inside and out. And if you are smart, you just keep a light hand on the wheel, making sure they're moving in the right direction and let them do their job.
Yeah, I mean, Rose Mofford had Jim Shumway running the elections department. He knew how to run elections. You leave him alone. You let him do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but you asked a really good question. Why aren't the Democrats winning in the statewide elections? And I think if you look back at Janet Napolitano, the last Democrat to win a statewide election for governor, she really didn't run as a Democrat. She ran as a moderate Republican. The Republican Party today has run out all of the moderates out of their
A moderate Republican right now is what the typical Republican refers to as a radical liberal.
Yes. John McCain doesn't. John McCain could not win a primary.
John McCain is a legitimate conservative Republican.
Yes, but they if you were to say that to the red meat Republicans, they spit back in your face. You know, he's a rhino.
Yeah.
But
because and that's interesting because they have a absolute 100% standard. You know, if you're not with it, what is McCain voted with Trump? Like 94% of the
Correct.
Something like that. That's not good enough.
Same with Jeff Flake.
Yeah.
Jeff Flake is a rock rib conservative, and yet the red meat Republicans in the state of Arizona would not vote him back in office.
And it's not so much, I think, in the case of Flake because of his voting record as it is that he has the temerity to actually have criticized Donald Trump largely on moral grounds.
Yes.
I think he's personally morally offended
yes.
by a lot of what Trump has done. And it's not policy stuff.
No, it's just on the moral grounds. Absolutely. Well, we'll see what happens here. All right.
And we will be back with Tom Ryan discussing all things politics in the state of Arizona when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Attorney and political instigator Tom Ryan is with us. We are going to talk about the state of Arizona this November. It looks like is going to be, the voters are going to be faced with a very interesting array of pretty significant ballot propositions.
Correct.
Let's talk about how they get there.
Well, I think in some measure, first off, you look at all the things like Invest in Ed, Outlaw Dirty Money, the Clean Healthy Initiative. All of those are in response to a legislature that is not meeting the needs of the citizenry. And if you look at the
these are things that would never in a million years pass our legislature.
Of course. Oh, no. They're led by our Speaker of the House, J.D. Mesner,
who tweeted about that. I forget which one he was talking about it, but he made this little snide comment that said, well, if we pass this, we're just going to turn into California. As if that was using California as the symbol for all things awesome. I would love to have the California economy.
It's the sixth
state.
Largest in the world, yeah. Not just sixth largest in the United yeah. States.
Well, your kid can graduate from college to a six-figure salary.
Right.
I mean.
We're
in contrast here, you know, $10 an hour scooping ice cream, which would be $7 if it had been up to the legislature.
Well, the legislature in the Republican Party is in large measure controlled by Arizona Public Service and the Koch brothers. Great book out there called Dark Money by Jane Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, goes into greater detail about this. But one of the unique things about the Arizona Constitution is the legislature is granted powers by the people of the state of Arizona, and any power not granted to the state legislature is reserved to the people.
Well, kind of analogous to the 10th Amendment.
Correct.
Which, delegates to the states those things not explicitly enumerated.
Correct. If people are really going to say, I support the Arizona Constitution, which was developed in the Progressive Era back in 1910, 1912, then they have to understand that's what our Constitution calls for. And unless you change it, all of these little efforts by the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate to undermine recall, initiative, referendum, all the powers –
Those are the progressive reforms of the early 20th century.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we became a state in the early 20th century, which is why we had that stuff in our Constitution, which most eastern states don't have. They've got very limited initiative.
Right. No, in fact, one of the clever things our forefathers did, our founding fathers rather did, is President Taft, who had been a judge and was going to be a Supreme Court judge, did not like the fact that our Arizona Constitution allowed for the recall of judges. And he said, I'm rejecting your Constitution. The Arizona Territorial Legislature said, okay, we'll take it out. So then Taft signs the Statehood Act.
And it's the first thing we put back in.
It's the recall of judges. So, but here's the important thing. For example, Arizona should be a leading state in the development of alternative energy, especially solar power.
Yeah, let's go through these one after
okay. the other. You lead the way.
That's one of them. One of the proposals is just that. It basically says 50% of our power shall be solar power by 2030.
It's doable.
And in contrast to the current standards, you don't get to count nuclear as renewable.
Right.
Because of the waste issue.
Right. Number one, nobody's going to be shutting down the Palo Verde nuclear power plant if this passes.
I know. But we're probably not building another.
No. The nuclear.
There's too much invested there to close that down as long as it's in its life cycle.
It's difficult to close it down. But first off, the idea that you have a nuclear power plant sitting in the middle of a desert where there's no identified body of water nearby really makes no sense.
But that's a sunk cost. I mean that ship has sailed. Yeah. It's got billions invested in it. It's not going away. We're gonna use it until it's. And by the way, though it's already at the end of its originally projected life cycle, though they're in the process of extending that.
Correct. Nobody's
proposing we take that one away.
But here's the thing. Arizona has we have some tremendous natural resources. We have abundant sunlight. Why aren't we building new – we should have a mandate that when we build new communities, that every house comes equipped with solar power. We're developing
– It's one of the ways to do it cheaper, by the way, because there is technology now where you have solar panels that are not placed on the roof. They are the roof.
Right.
So you've got a redundant cost right now. If you have a roof and then you add solar panels on top, you've got a double cost. There are solar panels that are produced for not that much more than the original cost of the roofing itself. So it becomes virtually free. That makes sense with new construction.
Correct. You now look at all the automakers are getting on board with electric cars again. Imagine that instead of going down to Exxon Mobil, you're going to your own car and you just plug in, and the source of that energy is from the sun. This is all completely doable.
I got a friend, John Martins, who's doing that. He's driving. He's right now in the middle of a giant road trip all the way up into Canada and then down the California coast, all on electric power.
The new electric cars are beautiful, but the point is. Here's the problem with the opposition to this clean, healthy initiative. APS opposes it because they don't understand how they can develop this and be part of this. And they are so connected to the coal powered plant like the Navajo Generating Station that they can't see how they can make this work for them.
We've had on a couple of the new SRP elected board members who have dealt with that issue over at SRP, and they say that a lot of the problem is these guys are in a mindset of
Correct.
Building these big, massive structures. Now, the difference between APS and SRP is that APS, if they build this massive structure, they get to build it into their rate structure and charge for it.
Correct.
SRP is a little bit different. They are a quasi-government entity, but it's still the same kind of mindset. And, of course, one of the most expensive things with power is building power stations that handle peak power. We have no problem with power in the off times. It's when we hit a peak, how do we cover that?
Correct. And I think with the advent of lithium batteries in the house, you're going to start seeing homes built with storage batteries.
Yep. We need storage to some side, though. It's interesting. Some of the most interesting storage solution I've seen, they've done in West Virginia. You know what it is?
What's that?
They have two massive reservoirs. And the power storage system is to pump the water from the lower up to the upper one. And then they let it go back down in the time when they need the power. I think right now solar is become incredibly more efficient. The far more interesting and provocative question for solar is how do we have storage systems that can be batteries, that can be anything that stores energy. And when you pump water up to a higher level, you are storing energy.
Right.
And when you do it on that massive level, it also tends to be very efficient too.
Well, you know, the APS is making lots of fun of Tom Steyer, and they're making fun of, you know, the petition collection process. But when you look at over almost a half a million signatures on there, you're going to have some fraudulent ones, and yes, you're going to have some ones that are defective. But
They've got a huge – the only one of these initiatives that I don't know, the Dirty Money Initiative, Terry Goddard's initiative, has a cushion of 20%. All the others are up over 100%.
Correct.
You know, cushion. So there's always some – petitions that get thrown up, particularly in the state of Arizona, if they have to be held to this what's the absolute perfect standard.
Oh yeah,
which Terry says he thinks he can challenge that in court.
I'd like to see him. I think that's a violation of Arizona's constitution, this rigid standard.
It, among other things, it's also just in the extreme hypocritical, because these same folks who say the petition has to be held to this impeccable standard are allowing their own petitions to be collected online. Not only to the lower standard, but you can do the whole thing online. What is the logic of how you can get on the ballot with an online petition, but if I want to put on a petition for fill in the blank, I have to not only get hundreds of thousands of signatures, but I have to do that out in 110-degree heat?
Well, first off, the legislation they passed to make it more difficult to get petitions, all it's done is done the opposite of what it said it would do. It's increased fraud, not decreased fraud.
How's that?
Well, because if you have professional paid petition gatherers, they know how to get signatures. What we've now done is create this system where you don't get paid per signature, you just get paid.
You outlawed that, yeah.
Right. If you get paid per valid signature, your incentive is to get the valid signatures. If you outlaw that and make it just an hourly rate, then somebody's going to say, here's 40 petitions. Yeah. One of those might have a good signature in there.
Though, interestingly, the Red for Ed people found just the opposite. Remember when they handed in their petitions, they said, oh, this is all volunteers. These petitions will be a mess. And the Secretary of State's office looked at them and said, this is the cleanest batch of petitions we've ever gotten. We will be back to conclude this with Tom Ryan in the think tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, Tom Ryan, we're here talking all things politics. Obviously, one of the enduring issue is build the dang fence, build the dang wall. Martha McSally says we should, in effect, build the dang wall, I think, is the latest iteration. This was a congresswoman who was moderate until being moderate no longer is cool in a Republican primary.
Not here in Arizona. If you want to make it out of the primary, if you really want to get a good feel and a good pulse for the Republican Party in the state of Arizona, a blog site called SeenRedAZ.com is excellent to get the pulse. I don't agree with a lot of their politics, but it really is a good, excellent site for understanding the zeitgeist, so to speak, of the Arizona GOP.
You know, I think we saw a little bit of that. Ken Bennett was here last week and running for governor, and I think quite obviously appealing to the hard right. You asked him about, you know, what's he going to do to improve education in our schools, and his answer was, we're going to put guns in the schools.
Yes.
that's a clear pander. NRA, you know, I'm a pro-gun guy.
You know, it's funny. The Republican Party has been built upon kind of three legs. Sorry about that, folks. Three legs to a stool. Here it is.
I'm not going in.
Yeah, thank you. Don't. anyway, the first one is kind of the libertarian leg is, you know, pro Second Amendment, the anti-federal government attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
The second one is very much a pro-business, pro-corporate, anti-tax leg. Mm-hmm. And then the last leg, and is probably the most powerful leg, is the what they call movement conservatives or the social conservatives.
I'd add a fourth there. What about strong national defense, aggressive foreign policy?
That you could make it that. I see that as part of the corporate one, because you have things like Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop Grumman. Okay. Yeah, I see that all as part of the
I mean, the Republicans were the stand up to the Russians people, at least
they were,
until the entire Republican establishment became scared to death of the wrath of Donald Trump.
And even weirder still is on July 4th, 8 U.S. American senators went to Moscow and, to listen to why we should be, lessening the sanctions. That's just nuts in my book. Ronald Reagan is spinning so fast in his grave right now that if you hooked up a couple of electric wires to him, you could
Still the patron saint of the Republican Party, though they've turned their back on most of the policies.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. But
now, Ronald Reagan also had some really juicy little quotes on immigration. He said, I see willing workers.
Yes. Now, the Republican Party is no longer the party of Ronald Reagan. It's clearly the
Barry Goldwater in 1962 wrote, what I see for Arizona in 50 years hence is open borders with Mexico.
Correct.
Quote, unquote.
There's a marvelous book called Shadows at Dawn, and it talks about it leads up to what happened to the Camp Grant massacre, which was a massacre that occurred in southeastern Arizona back in the late 1800s. There was a time when the Tucson, Nogales, Bisbee people, Douglas, they were happy with the open borders because there was a lot of commerce between Sonora, Mexico, and the southern
Well, still is.
Yes.
Still is. I mean, when you talk about people who don't want to see, who want to see the borders closed, that does not include people in Nogales and Sonora. And anybody who lives around the border hates the idea.
Yeah, Yuma.
Because there's a lot of those places whose very existence is intimately intertwined with the international border.
So when you hear
there's
these
people in Chicago and people in Detroit or more,
they don't understand the border. And that's the problem. We see these political candidates come out and say, let's build the dang wall. It's a great motto as a soundbite, but in terms of actual implementation and functioning, it makes no sense whatsoever. There are canyons. There are big rivers. You're going to be cutting across private property. You're going to be affecting wildlife.
The Indian reservation cut in half.
Yes.
It's one reservation. By the way, the other thing about – I think it's largely symbolic-ish. When people say build a wall, what they mean is secure the national border, ignoring a couple of facts. Number one, net migration right now with Mexico is zero.
Yes.
There are as many people going south as north. So there are still people coming north. They are coming from Guatemala and Honduras, where they are facing gangs that say, your kid becomes a member of our gang or else I will kill your entire family.
Yes.
And those people are not migrants. They are refugees. And for refugees, there are laws. There have always been laws in this country. Legitimate refugees, you have to prove. You have to. We don't just take your word for it. You have to prove, and I think this is a pretty close to a direct quote on the law, that there is, quote, a legitimate fear of persecution, in which case we have always accepted refugees, or we've always been literally required to.
Correct. And now we have a federal government that's going back and reviewing prior grants of naturalization of citizenship, and we're going back and looking at denaturalizing them. That is a scary process, and that is not about Americans.
I want to know how far back we're going because we're all at risk on that one.
Yeah, we would. If somebody were to ask for me to produce the papers of my ancestors to prove that they came from Ireland lawfully, I couldn't prove that. I assume that they came over and everybody was okay with it, but whether or not my ancestors violated the law or not, I couldn't prove that. And to be demanding that of people who've been naturalized, and we're going back now and looking at them and saying,
and you would think when citizenship is granted, we think of that as a permanent thing. That's a status that you achieve. You don't get there. You don't get that lightly.
Correct.
In some cases, you can get into a country that doesn't make you a citizen.
This is ever since I will give the Republican Party this credit that ever since 9/11, they've effectively merged this whole concept of border security with anti-immigrant status and national security.
And a lot of Republicans now, I think it's a majority, have become, as a result, against the idea of immigration, not just illegal immigration.
Any immigration.
Any immigration.
That's what you're seeing today. That's right. The crazy thing is when 9/11 happened, every one of those that were involved in that terrorist plot were here lawfully in the United States. They were here from
Saudi Arabia, first of all. So what are we going to do? Well, let's attack Iraq.
That made no sense. And that's the point. None of this makes any sense in terms of national security. In fact, I think it's made us less secure. Mm-hmm. One of the things that General Patton talked about was the idea of military walls as a line of defense. And nothing makes less sense to a military commander than looking at, like the Siegfried Line or the Maginot Line. None of those were effective in protecting France or Germany or anything like that. And putting a wall along the entire southern border will not do anything either. Yeah.
Great Wall of China took hundreds of years to build, immense resources. Oh, didn't work, by the way, folks.
It's a marvelous tourist attraction.
You only have to peer. It's a great tourist attraction. It's impressive to watch. It just didn't do what it was intended to do.
No, of course not.
So I want to ask you on the subject of border issues, the images of splitting families and children. Do you think does this come back to haunt?
Yes.
The Republicans in the next election.
Yes. It is a vile, disgusting thing that's happening.
It's an image that people can identify with. What would it be like if your child were ripped from you? How would you feel?
Right.
What would be the trauma done to your child?
The images are frightening. They're disgusting to see these families ripped apart. The emotional return of a mother and a child in a airport. This is going to have a lasting effect. And I think where the Republican Party is going to be losing people is in what we call the millennial portion of this generation.
That, by the way, is the group that is heavily Democrat. There was a poll recently done on who's the best president in your lifetime?
Obama.
For the millennials.
That's right.
Not for any of the other groups.
Yeah,
but for Quick question now on the other side.
Okay.
Democrats proposing abolishing ICE. I think they're missing the point on that. I think, they're not really saying it, that comes across as let's no longer do anything about the border, which it doesn't mean.
They need to be talking about reforming ICE to get rid of the excesses.
We used to have an immigration and naturalization service that says multifunction. And then we created ICE that sees its mission solely as law enforcement.
Oh, and it's been brutal. Yes.
Okay. You hear the music. You know we're done.
Thanks, Mike.
Tom Ryan, always a pleasure in the think tank. By the way, you can find earlier episodes at ktar.com and all of the old ones carefully indexed at mikeoneil.org. See you next week in the think tank.